The Rudy Valley Hour, celebrating the completion of 9 full years on the air. Tonight's all-star anniversary cast, Walter Houston, Joe Cook, Lou Holtz, Walter O'Keefe, Vincent Lopez. This is Rudy Valley and Anniversary Company. 9 years of weeks. That comes to 468 broadcasts. 468 attempts to keep Mr. and Mrs. America amused for an hour on Thursday evening. Occasionally, we have succeeded in brilliant fashion. Occasionally, we have failed completely. Generally, we think we rate a mark of B+ over the entire course. A little on the favorable side of a passing grade. If you object, however, we'll settle for a straight B. If we have sometimes been able to do better than that, it is because of the presence on both coasts of certain dependable people. Artists we have used again and again. The backbone of our variety plan since its inception. 5 of those dependable friends in need are here tonight. One of them is Graham McNamee. And the other 4, Graham?
Mr. Walter Houston.
Heard in an episode from the new Maxwell Anderson musical comedy hit, Knickerbocker Holiday, with music by Kurt Weill. Walter will be assisted by Gene Madden and most of the cast of the show, in which he plays and sings the part of Peter Stuyvesant.
Mr. Lou Holt,
past Grand Master of the Itsy Pitsy Lodge, friend and intimate of that internationally famous Shamil, Sam Lapidus, and this program's favorite Maharaja.
Mr. Joe Cook,
of Evansville, Indiana, non-imitator of 4 Hawaiians, whose nonsense narratives have lifted many a broadcast beyond the level of mediocrity.
Mr. Walter O'Keefe.
A keen Irish wit, a taut Connecticut tongue, and a heart of gold beneath a city slicker's smooth coat. That's Walter. In addition to these stalwarts, we shall present one other fine artist for the first time.
Mr. Vincent Lopez,
whose connection with these festive proceedings will develop later on in
The Rudy Valley Hour. Act 1 is presented by the makers of Royal Desserts, Royal Gelatin, and Royal Pudding.
Plays the rum and the tuba down to Cuba. And when he stops, hell an apple, but the chap is rather grapple with his umpa umpa umpa. They prefer the boopa dupa dupa. They love the rum and the tuba down in Cuba. They love his umpa 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 umpa.
One of 2 medleys made up of songs which have in 9 years become firmly identified with this time and this place.
and drink a toast once again. Let every loyal Maine man sing, then drink to all the happy hours. Drink to the careless days. Drink to Maine, our alma mater, the college of our hearts away.
To the trees, to the skies, to the spring that's glorious happiness, to the youth, to the fire, to the life that is moving and calling us, to the gods, to the fates, to the rulers of men and their destinies, to the lips, to the eyes, to the girls who will love us someday.
Oh, dear. Thank you, old man. Shout in the laughter of me. Stand and drink the toast once again. Let every loyal Maine man sing and drink to all the happy hours. Drink to the care of days. Drink to Maine, our alma mater, the colleagues of our hearts.
Back from Hollywood. And what, after all these years, can one say about Lou? This at least. He tells a dialect story better than any comedian in the history of show business. And somehow or other, he digs up the best stories. Holtz, front and center. Tell me, Lou, how'd you enjoy yourself on the coast?
Oh, Rudy, really, I had a wonderful time.
Did you play any golf?
No, Rudy, I didn't play any golf, but I went ice skating. Ice skating, that's the big thing out there. Ice skating, I went every night.
And did you make an impression?
Yes, Rudy, and it wasn't a footprint.
How's your friend Sam Lapidus?
Oh, Sam.
Is he in town?
Sam's in town, yes. Sam's in town. He was, he went down on the Lower East Side about a week ago, Rudy. He went into a restaurant to get something to eat. It was the first time that he'd ever been in this particular restaurant. Mm-hmm. And the man who owns the place, he wanted to impress Sam. So on the way out, as Sam was paying the check, he says, you enjoyed the meal? Enjoyed it? Huh? And he says, yes, food, very tasty. Very delicious. He says, except the bread. He says, all you're giving me is two slices bread, he said. And with me, a meal is not a meal unless you're giving heavy bread. All you gave in the bread, he says, was two broken down slices. Fella says, the next time you're coming here, you are getting plenty brass. So Lapidus, he came into the place about a week later, sat down, the boss spied him, walked into the restaurant and got eight big, thick slices of bread. He sends it into Lapidus, and on the way out, he's waiting for Lapidus. He says, well, enjoy the meal? Hmm? A pleasure? Lapidus says, yes, food's very tasty, he says. Very appeasing to the palate. He said, but the bread, this is all you're giving is eight slices, he says. He says, eight slices bread I'm eating if I'm on a diet. He says, the stuff of life is bread. Bread is the thing for the inner man. It takes care of vitamin A and B and also handles C. The fellow says, the next time you are coming in, you are going to get bread. B-B, but bread. So the next time he comes in, Rudy, the boss goes into the kitchen, gets a sandwich loaf a yard long. A yard long. He slices it lengthwise. Lengthwise, right down the center. Sends it out to Lapidus. Lapidus finishes the meal he's waiting for him. Comes out, he says, well, how about the meal? Enjoyed it? Hmm? Enjoyed it? He says, very tasty, good. He says, how was the bread? He says, very good, but what's the idea going back to the two slices?
Tell me, Lou, how is it we never hear about Mrs. Lapidus? Is Sam married?
Oh, yes, Sam is married, and Mrs. Lapidus is a very charming lady. As a matter of fact, Rudy, she was sitting in Central Park the other Sunday afternoon on a bench, and along came a very charming lady, sat down alongside of her, says, how do you do? It's certainly a beautiful day. Mrs. Lapidus said, you said it. And they became deeply engrossed in conversation. They're talking about everything that's going on. When along came Rudy, a little boy about 7 years old, with the largest ears that have ever been on any little boy. You could use either ear for a loving cup. I mean to say that this boy really had large ears. Mrs. Lapita saw the little boy. She says, now there is a monstrosity. I have seen monstrosities in my life, but that is without a doubt the biggest monstrosity what I'm ever seeing of any monstrosity. The lady said to her, I beg your pardon, but you are referring to my son. Mrs. Lapita says, you didn't let me finish. That's a terrific monstrosity, but on him, it's becoming. Say, Rudy, I have a story that I'd like you to hear because it's a brand new story. This has to do with a fellow by the name of Ginsburg the Great. Ginsburg the Great was a juggler. He juggled around, and finally he disappeared from the theatrical horizon for 2 or 3 years. He had a very poor act. So one day, he walks into his agent's office, and he said, Ginsburg the Great is back on the job. His agent, a very naive fellow, in a very subtle manner, said, get out, you smell. Ginsburg said, I used to smell. He says, but not now. He says, I have been rehearsing in my cellar for a year and a half. He says, you remember I used to give the juggling with 8 balls? Now I got a whole new act. He says, not only am I giving with the 8 balls, he said, but I am putting in my mouth a piece of chalk, plain white chalk. I got a blackboard. While I'm making with the 8 balls, I'm drawing on the blackboard a battleship. And when you turn it upside down, it's Rudy Valley. So the agent said, you might have something there. He said, I'll tell you what you do. You open next Monday night in Jersey City, 3 days for $45. Ginsburg said, it's a beginning. It's a starter. He goes over, Rudy, to Jersey City, goes out on the stage, starts with the 8 balls, puts the chalk in his mouth, and he starts to draw. The bottom of the blackboard hits him in the chin. The balls fall on the blackboard. He's trying to draw, knocks the blackboard over. The balls fall on the floor. The manager closes in the curtains. Comes back, he says, Ginsburg, you were always bad. Now get out, your act smells. Get out and stay out. And Ginsburg said, why do I hold out on you? Why don't I give you the full act? He says, why am I such a no good person? He says, the next show, not only am I giving you the 8 balls, he says, but I am putting a pull cue on the chin. On top of the chin, he says, on top of the cue is a pull ball. Now, I'm making with 8 balls, I'm balancing the cue on the chin, a ball on top, I'm releasing from the wings a pigeon. The pigeon is going around the pull cue. The band plays Yankee Doodle, kills all the people. Manager says, we'll try it. He goes on that night, starts with the 8 balls, puts the pull cue on the chin, the ball on the pull cue. The pigeon comes in. It knocks the ball over. Everything falls on the ground. Manager, they're closing the curtains. Manager comes back. He says, now get out. You smell. Lapita says, why do I keep holding out on you? Why am I so full of petty larceny? The next show, you get the full act. 8 balls. The pull cue on the chin, a ball on the cue. Not only do I release the mama pigeon, but I'm releasing the papa pigeon. They are both going at the same time. 8 balls, hoops on the sleeves. Hoops on the sleeves, hoops on the legs, he says. Ben's playing Yankee Doodle, full blast. They're releasing a hook from the flies. The hook is catching me by the back of the coat, lifts me up in the air, 8 balls, hoops on the sleeves. Ben plays Yankee Doodle, hook and stand it. The fellow says, we'll try it. He goes on that night with the pool cue, the 8 balls, the pigeons are flying, the hoops on the sleeves. Down comes the hook, it gets him up in the air, and while he's swinging, the band is playing Yankee Doodle, the rope breaks. The rope breaks, and there is Ginsburg the Great, lying on the floor. Say, Rudy, I want you to see if you get this finished. This is very cute, and you got to be very quick. Now, he's laying on the ground. His hands are up in the air like that, and his legs are in the same position, and he can't move. That's the position he's in. hands up in the air, flat on his back, and his legs up in the air. The doctor comes, he looks at him, he says, Ginsburg, you will never work again. He says, how do you say? He says, you will never work again. Ginsburg said, is that so? Well, just throw me an acrobat.
Looking ahead to Christmas, a special anniversary offer to our listeners.
At this moment, we are ready to put in the mail for you a set of 10 beautiful Christmas cards, and we're offering them at a marvelous saving. 10 big, handsome cards with matching envelopes, most of them 5 inches square or larger, all different, all beautiful. And so new and exclusive, you won't see them in any store this Christmas, and of course, they contain no advertising whatever. You'll be proud to send cards of such wonderful quality. Each is a rich double fold of vellum or fancy finished paper, finely printed in lovely colors. Each verse expresses beautifully the wonderful message of Christmas. And we offer these exclusive cards at an unheard of low price to the friends of Royal Desserts. If you've never served these tempting desserts, try them right away. They're inexpensive, easy to make, and wonderful in flavor. Try Royal Gelatin with its 7 delicious real fruit flavors, and Royal Puddings, made with wholesome arrowroot. Then send us 1 package front from any flavor with only 10 cents. We'll send you your 10 Christmas cards postpaid. For the extra cards you're sure to need, send another package front and another dime for each set of 10 cards. Write to Royal Desserts, 420 Lexington Avenue, 420 Lexington Avenue, New York City. Ask your grocer for Royal Desserts and send for your Christmas cards tomorrow.
During our 9 years on the air, no top-rank actor has ever appeared before this microphone more often than Walter Houston. And no actor has a more consistent record of fine performances here. Walter is currently much occupied as Peter Stuyvesant in Maxwell Anderson's brilliant new musical comedy, Knickerbocker Holiday, the second major hit within 2 weeks under the proud new banner of the Playwrights Producing Company. Last week, we brought you Raymond Massey as Abraham Lincoln. This week, Walter Houston as Peter Stuyvesant with Jean Madden as Tina in an episode from Knickerbocker Holiday. Words by Maxwell Anderson, music by Kurt Weill. Our conductor, Maurice de Abravanel. Mr. Houston. Time, 1647. Place, New Amsterdam. Old New York under Dutch rule. Or rather, under the powerful thumb of Peter Stuyvesant, its new governor, an irascible tyrant who brooks no objection to his rule and has rules for everything, including, we notice, exact regulations for the guidance of Dutch maidens engaged in that ancient Dutch duty, scrubbing the white doorsteps of neat Dutch cottages. As the curtain rises, a coterie of maidens is scrubbing a coterie of steps in strict unison. In unison, that is, with one exception, Tina. Tina, we shall learn, has been betrothed to the aging governor against her will. The maiden scrub.
We're not supposed to say 5, only 4.
I know it very well, but it's my personal opinion that all housework adds up to odd numbers.
Nobody asked your opinion. We were told exactly what to do.
Well, it was a great mistake not to ask our opinions, because we know more about housework than the governor does.
But don't let him hear you say that after you're married.
No, indeed.
I shall say exactly what I please. He's a stuffy old codger, and he doesn't know everything.
Here he comes.
Come, come. Fish, clap, clap, wash,
someone say five?
I did.
Pretty aberration. Charming touch of defiance emanating from so sweet, so tousled, and so unmarried a head. But after we are married, then we shall see.
Yes, we will indeed.
Tut, tut, tut. No frowns, no sulks, no rebellion. You're a highly privileged young lady. This is our betrothal day, and even now the Grand Army of New Amsterdam is drilling for a spectacular parade in your honor. We shall review the troops together.
Oh, dear, here they come.
A scrubby lot, but I'll make them shine. Company, halt! At ease. I have but one fault to find with this army. There is still too much individual thinking in the ranks. Take care. Individual thinking can be detected without the slightest difficulty by any good officer. It shows in every movement, in the response to every order. You, sir, Vanderbilt, it shows in your face this very moment. What are you thinking?
Excuse me. I was thinking, what's the good marching in the army when we wasn't fighting nobody?
My dear sir, my nature is so irritable, my temper so uncertain, and my habit of mind so pugnacious that we shall be at war very shortly. Very shortly.
That's awful.
On the contrary, it's a therapeutic measure. Nation at peace grows fat-headed and short-winded. As witness your own mental and physical condition. A short war with, say, Connecticut would restore tone. Why, the Connecticutans have built a fort on the Connecticut River within our territories, and they must, of course, be driven out, whatever the cost in patriot blood.
Then we get in a war?
Naturally.
With the whole of Connecticut? Ooh, that's awful. Couldn't we send them a letter? Maybe we could make a deal and give them Boston.
That is exactly the spirit I intend to destroy among you. You have grown fat and foolish for lack of an antagonist. Since we have no enemies, it is necessary to create them. Well, sir, why aren't you holding your head up?
There's one question I could maybe want to ask.
Well, what is it?
When we march up to the fort, is it absolutely necessary that I should march in front?
An intelligent question. Allow me to answer you by a brief demonstration of military tactics. Attention! Left face. And all my men in parade formation with the gravest, wisest, most eloquent, and most dignified of our citizens in the front rank. This, in all civilized countries, is the proper order for parades and other civil functions. Mouth face. This, on the other hand, is military formation for field duty and attack. The youngest, most active in the front, the older and more valuable in the rear. In this order, we shall charge the enemy. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely.
Then, as a pledge to our mutual determination, we shall now sing the war song of New Amsterdam. Hold your head erect and sing with enthusiasm, for I shall be watching you. Mark time. March!
To war, to war, to war. We don't want to be a fighting force. To war, to war, to war. But that's all right, you soldiers go to war. Or if we leave the maidens we adore, it's not exactly that we fancy more. To come home, keep first, lay out 6-5-4. For minus them, the certain can't restore. For that's in their offer gone.
Nonsense, nonsense. You are much too beautiful to remain unwed another day. Before I left Holland, it had been arranged for political reasons that I should espouse the daughter of mine here, Tienhoven. Whatever her appearance or her manners, I should have been obliged to marry her. What good fortune. What good fortune. What astounding luck. What a face and what a figure. A divinity among maidens. There is no princess in the courts of Europe with half your beauty or your charm.
I'm afraid you flatter me.
You haven't seen the present crop of princesses. Well, my dear, I understate the case. My impression is more than favorable. I'm delighted. And have arrangements been made for the wedding?
Well, I hadn't thought.
Oh, the sooner the better, my dear Tina. The sooner the better. It's a little late today, but tomorrow.
Oh, no, no, please.
Not tomorrow.
Well, I'm very young, and I'm not ready at all.
How old are you, my dear?
16, sir.
16. Well, you're getting along. I should, of course, defer to your desires in such a matter, but let us understand each other. It is your father's wish that you marry me?
Yes, sir.
And you would hardly oppose your father's decision?
No, sir.
Then, since it's to come sooner or later, my child, and you arouse my ardent affection, I see no point in postponement.
But don't you think you could wait a few years?
Years?
Yes, sir.
Years? You are young, my sweet. You have the world and a lifetime before you. My hair is graying at the temples. Slightly, but gray. The days slip rapidly through my fingers. For my sake, try to overcome your girlish modesty and let me lead you to the altar while the fire burns brightly.
In a few months?
Hmm?
Then a few weeks?
Oh, these months and weeks. When I was a young man courting the girls, I played me a waiting game. If a maid refused me with tossing curls, I'd let the old earth take a couple of whirls while I plied her with tears in place of pearls. And as time came around, she came my way. As time came around, she came. But it's a long, long while from May to December, and the days grow short when you reach September. And I have lost one tooth, and I walk a little lame, and I haven't got time for the waiting game. And the days dwindle down to a precious few. September, November. And these few precious days I'd spend with you. These precious days I'd spend with you. You see, my dear, why wait? Have you memorized the little handful of rules which I drew up as a guidance for the wives of New Amsterdam?
I'm afraid not all of them.
Then put on your thinking cap, my dear. You will need these few precepts before nightfall.
Governor Stuyvesant.
Yes?
Well, No, I can't ask him. I don't dare.
Tut, tut, tut. Now, what was the very first admonition on your list, child? Repeat them all from the beginning.
Rules for the wives of New Amsterdam.
One.
A wife should have nothing on her mind which she does not tell her husband, and should tell her husband nothing which does not give him pleasure.
Quite accurate. Two.
Husband and wife should never pass in the doorway. She should never go out as he comes in, nor come in as he goes out.
And as a corollary, the less she goes out, the better. Three.
She shall avoid all demonstrations of affection, except when alone with her husband. For a Hollander's lady, like Caesar's wife, must be beyond reproach.
A crude rule, but necessary. Four?
Four. No dinner is good unless hot.
There, my dear, is the heart of domestic science. Never forget that rule. Five.
For breakfast, the wife should provide a great number of fresh eggs, which have been boiled 3 minutes by the glass, and a great rasher of bacon neatly fried. And she should smile constantly at her husband across these eggs and bacon. For a man is never at his best in the morning and needs encouragement. Oh, I never can do it.
Oh,
never.
Yes, you will do very well in the beginning, my dear, and better later. For as a woman loses her charms, she begins to excel in cookery. Come, my dear, you know the rules. Why wait until tomorrow?
But, sir, there was someone else.
Was there?
Yes, but I'll tell him if I have to. If I have to, I'll tell
him. That's a good girl. Come. Yes, it's a long, long while from May to December. Will a clover ring last till you reach September? And I'm not quite equipped for the waiting game. But I have a little money, and I have a little fame. For the days turn to gold,
as they grow few. September, November, and these few golden days I'd spend with you. These golden days I'd spend with you.
Tonight we offer you an amazing opportunity to get beautiful Christmas cards at an unheard-of saving. You'll receive 10 big, handsome cards with envelopes, cards so new, so exclusive, you won't find them in any store this Christmas. And they're beautiful. Rich double folds of vellum or fancy finished paper, most of them 5 inches square or larger. And of course, they contain no advertising. The 10 cards are yours for just one package front from Royal Desserts, any flavor, and 10 cents. Write to Royal Desserts, 420 Lexington Avenue, New York City. The Rudy Valley Hour will continue in just a moment.
WEAF, New York.
Time flies, and ninth year merges into tenth with Joe Cook, Vincent Lopez, and Walter O'Keefe. Still to come in
The Rudy Valley Hour, Act Two, brought to you by Fleischmann's Yeast.
Fine and dandy always means Joe Cook. Joe has been with us 14 times in 9 years. The quality of his humor is never strained. It possesses an inherent gentleness, recognized by everyone who knows Joe as the dominant characteristic of the man himself. Offstage as well as on. He has the same genuine genius for nonsense that Lewis Carroll had, and W.S. Gilbert, and nowadays, Walt Disney, from which we want you to gather that we are extremely fond of Joe Cook.
Thank you. Much obliged. As my contribution to Rudy's ninth year on the ninth anniversary on the air, I'm going to repeat a little story tonight that I have never told before. And another thing I've never told before is the fact that when I was a boy, I used to live in Evansville, Indiana. And I'll never forget one hot 4th of July day, my mother says to me, Joseph, put on your raincoat and rubbers, and I'll take you for a nice walk. I says, why, Mama, it doesn't look like rain. And she says, I know, but I want to take a shortcut through the lake, and I don't want you to get your brother's suit wet. So I put on my raincoat and rubbers, took hold of both of my mother's hands, and the three of us walked down the street together. I was on both sides of my mother. You see, in those days, I was twins. Of course, later on, I incorporated. Well, sir, we'd hardly gotten farther down the street than you can throw a marshmallow when who should we meet, sauntering out of a burning building, but Mrs. E.D. McKillicuddy and her little boy, Useless. And my mother says, Joseph, Mother doesn't have to remind you to tip your hat to Mrs. McKillicuddy, does she? And I says, well, that's up to you, Mama. So she reminded me. She kicked me in the shins, and I tipped my hat to Mrs. McKillicuddy. And she tipped her hat back to me. She's a very polite lady. So Mrs. McKillicuddy says, I just bought my boy Useless a little 10-cent tin flute. Why don't you buy your brat, or boy, a musical instrument. My mother says, that's a good idea. So she bought me a great big bass fiddle. Of course, she didn't pay cash. She shot dice with the clerk for it. The idea of the game was to see who could make the highest point with one roll of the two dice. Well, sir, the clerk threw a 12, and to this day, I don't know how my mother ever did it, but she threw a 13. And you should have seen that fiddle. It came in a big fur-lined case, all fitted out with a nice bow and some rosin. I ate the rosin, made a sandwich on rye bread out of it. Very good, too. Well, we lived on the corner of 4th and Oak, and the way the streets run in Evansville, we'll say that here is Oak Street. Then you pass by Cherry, Chestnut, Walnut, Locust, Main, Sycamore, past the barn where they kept the fire engine and chicken thieves, on past Curly O'Blot's blacksmith shop and ice cream parlor, and then you are in the other end of Evansville. Well, my bass fiddle teacher, Professor Schreiber, he lived out in the other end of Evansville, where they didn't allow folks to raise goats in their backyard. And we lived over in this end of Evansville, where they did allow goats to raise folks. Well, you can't get everything right. But now, the first day I got ready to take my lesson, I was 9 years old. I stood about 3'3" in my stocking feet. Well, I get two or three men to help me get the bass fiddle up on my back. But before I started out from my teacher's house, my mother says to me, "Joseph, you have a long walk ahead of you. Here's a pint of apple." And I says, "Oh, thank you, Mama." She says, "Drink it all." I says, "I will." She says, "No ginger ale with it." I said, no, I'll drink it straight." Wasn't I a good boy, huh? Well, we get the bass fiddle up on my back, and I start out from the teacher's house, oak, cherry, chestnut, walnut. I finally arrive and discover I cannot reach the neck of the fiddle. I was too short. But the professor has seen my 50 cents and will not let me go home without my lesson. So he says, "Stand up on that bureau." There was a nice bureau in the parlor. And I says, "Well, won't Mrs. Schreiber object?" He says, "I'm the boss of this house. You stand up on that bureau." I says, "All right, you're the boss." So I stood up on the bureau. And just then, Mrs. Schreiber came home from the pool parlor. And she says, "Get that little runt down off that bureau." Well, I looked at the professor, and he looked at the pool cue in his wife's hands, and I says, "Shall I get down?" And he says, "Yes, I guess you better get down." I says, "All right, you're the boss," so I got out off the bureau. Not that I blame Mrs. Schreiber. Maybe I shouldn't have worn my baseball shoes. But Mrs. Schreiber says, "If that little squirt wants to stand on any bureaus around this house, let him bring his own bureau." Well, sir, the only bureau we had to spare around our house was a great big old oak bureau, and my mother says, "Well, you can have that, but I want you to bring it home every day after you finish your lesson." So the next day, I have the big old oak bureau under one arm, the bass fiddle on my back, and I start out oak, cherry, chestnut, walnut. Of course, this day, my mother gave me a quart. She says, "You'll need it. You got a heavy load there, son." Well, I get somewhere around Main Street, and I lost my whereabouts. I was all bent over with my heavy load, couldn't read the street signs, so I backed up a block. And at the next corner, the same situation prevailed, so I backed up another block. And I kept on backing up and backing up till finally I backed right out of town. And I backed through Indianapolis, Detroit, Cleveland, Chicago. I made what you might call a cook's tour of the entire country. In fact, I was on the road as long as Rudy's been on the air. Because exactly 9 years later, I backed back into Evansville and right up to Professor Schreiber's front door. I knocked and Professor Schreiber opened the door. There he stood with a long gray beard. He put on his spectacles, looked down at me, and said, "Hello, Joe." "So long, Rudy."
This winter, snow and colder in these latitudes. That's our startling prediction, based on at least 9 years of experience. A further and more newsworthy observation regarding the winter ahead.
This winter, a lot of people shouldn't be having such heavy colds, and they shouldn't be feeling so tired and nervous and run down. You see, we now have a new tonic food that will help many of us to feel vigorous and energetic. It's the new Fleischmann's High Vitamin Yeast, now on sale at grocery stores in this vicinity. This new high vitamin yeast offers us a new, improved way to get extra vitamins. It's richer than ever in four essential vitamins, but even more important, it gives you these vitamins in more helpful form. By improving slow digestion and assimilation, this fresh, active yeast helps the body make fuller use of these vitamins as well as the other foods you eat. And many people don't get full benefit from the vitamins they eat, and many other people don't eat enough vitamins to begin with. Average meals often do not give enough. But now, by simply adding 2 cakes of Fleischmann's new high vitamin yeast to your diet, you get all the extra vitamins A, B, and D the average person needs. Also an abundant supply of vitamin G. Just look at the label and you'll see what a bargain in vitamins this new yeast is. And remember, besides, Fleischmann's yeast helps to tone up and strengthen slow digestion. Begin tomorrow eating this new Fleischmann's high vitamin yeast. Eat 1 cake, plain or dissolved in a little water, a half hour before breakfast or lunch, another cake, a half hour before supper. Do this regularly, and see if you don't have an easier time with severe colds and if you don't have energy to spare.
Yes, Nola means Vincent Lopez. He of the nimble fingers. Vincent is with us on our anniversary this evening at my special request for two reasons. First, I've been one of his admirers for considerably more than 9 years. And B, he gave me my first job in New York, starting a train of events that led up to the beginning of 9 years on the air. This will be Lopez speaking.
Rudy, I wouldn't want to shatter any of your sentimental illusions, but it happens I didn't have much to do personally with giving you that job. I remember looking up one day and seeing a new face in the band. Later on, the face turned out to be you playing third sax.
But at least you didn't fire me, Vincent.
I didn't get a chance. Before I really got round to it, you were famous. I suppose I should have realized there was something unusual lurking in my sax section when you asked me for my autograph between dance sets.
You would remember that.
How could any band leader forget a thing like that, Rudy? A saxophone player is generally more inclined to throw chairs at his boss than to request an autograph while at work.
I suppose I was a rather naive lad at the time, Vince. Hero worship has always been a failing of mine.
I wouldn't call it a failing, Rudy. It's failings like that one that keep people on the air 9 years. And while I have the floor, I'd like to add a few more anniversary compliments. From the standpoint of a fellow band leader, Rudy, you have accomplished two things of particular importance. Firstly, you popularized the notion that a leader should make his own announcements.
In which I merely followed the precedent already set by you and Ben Burney.
But you made the idea popular, gave it universal acceptance. And secondly, Rudy, your success as a singer emboldened thousands of other American boys and girls with untrained voices to try the same thing.
To a lot of other people, that probably isn't a compliment, Vincent. But I think I know what you mean.
Of course you do. You sang simply, honestly, without any of the affectations of the trained concert singer on one hand or the Broadway Jolson imitator on the other. And you still do. You have proved that simplicity and sincerity are more important than frills. And you have encouraged a complete generation of singers to go and do likewise.
And now, having had my...
Yeah, let me say it. And now, having had my say, I shall go to work, all right?
The aforesaid... The aforesaid work being... The aforesaid work being a Lopez arrangement for piano of Tule Tulip Time. And I knew that someday I'd discover her, the girl of my vagabond dream. She's so dumb, but still she brings me joy. Why, she thinks that a goblet is a sailor's little boy. I love her, that's easy to see. Kansas City Kitty for me. Another collection of tunes that you have liked on and off for some 9 years. Betty Coed is loved by every college boy, but I'm the one who's loved by Betty Coed. Antidote for the compliments of Vincent Lopez. Like Lou Holtz, Joe Cook, and Walter Houston, the O'Keefe made his network bow at our microphone. On his first appearance, I recall, he hopefully offered a song which has since attained a degree of fame. Walter's grown heartily sick of the song in the meantime, but it still means, here comes the O'Keefe.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and to you, Rudy Valley, on this, your 9th anniversary, let me add my congratulations. I've been on the air 8 years myself, but I've been interrupted. And any man who can hold any job for 9 years deserves credit, but when you can keep a radio boss happy for 468 consecutive weeks, you've done a remarkable thing, and ladies and gentlemen, I speak from experience and the heart. This is O'Keefe speaking, the will-o'-the-wisp of the killer cycle. And your program tonight, Rudy, like hundreds of others, maintains that standard of artistic elegance. Of all the rest, you've got Joe Cook to intrigue the intelligentsia. Walter Houston for the theater-minded. You have Vincent Lopez for the musically-minded. And Lou Holtz for Cafe Society in the Bronx. I'm here to please my wife and children. You know, Rudy's success is all the more amazing when you consider the terrific obstacles he's overcome. He was christened Hubert Pryor. I'm surprised he even speaks to his father to this day. You know, ladies and gentlemen, Rudy has grown tremendously. Of course, in the last 9 years, Graham McNamee has grown, too. He's grown horizontally. Graham looks as if he swallowed a medicine ball. But Rudy has grown spiritually. You know, as a boy, he was sort of self-centered. He was all wrapped up in himself. And he made a horrible-looking bundle. There were those days in Maine when he worked in his father's drugstore there, and they had a 35-cent blue plate special. Yeah, you got, for 35 cents, you got tomato juice, chicken soup, you got chicken a la king, and a lock of Rudy's hair. If you didn't like Rudy's hair, you got your choice of two vegetables. And now, after 9 years of broadcasting, you can definitely say that Valley is a pioneer, a radio pioneer. If he can just hold on for 3 more years, I'm sure that Henry Ford will buy him for that museum of early American antiques. But, candidly, Valley's effect on his generation has been, it's been tremendous. He was the first crooner. He produced the first variety show on radio. And he's even had a terrific influence on the women of our time. Yeah, Rudy was wearing his hair up 9 years ago. Oh, Valley, you're an ornament to your whole background. You know, we wouldn't hear much about the state of Maine if it weren't for Valley and the potato crop. And Yale University, your alma mater, Yale should be proud of you, too. It's just a great shame that the Yale football team can't deliver as consistently as Valley does. Never mind, Hubert, Hubie. Listen, Hubie. Yale beat Notre Dame one, and incidentally, I'm going to see Notre Dame play the Army Saturday. I was in a bit of a quandary. I didn't know whether to buy a seat in the stock exchange or a ticket for Notre Dame Army, but I'm going to the Army Notre Dame game. I think I'll get a better run for my money. I'm interested also in Elmer Layden's new team, Citgo, the names, you know. Citgo, Zantini, Gubanik, Simonik. It looks as if Layden has an extra slice of European territory, too. But to get back to Rudy and his success, like all other great Americans who have made a success, Valley has made millions of dollars. And he's got them. His pocket has a sign in it saying, not to be open till Christmas, 1965. I didn't think he'd make it today. He was down making purchases today. He was buying presents for the musicians for Christmas. And he was injured. He was crushed between a couple of push carts. But Valley... Rudy Valley is a great student of the dollar, and consequently, he has a great cultural life. You know, I've seen his apartment. And what an apartment. Simple, frugal, monastic, unostentatious. You'd never know it was Valley's except for the tiger skin rug and the incense. And there in that humble abode, this mystic has the best library of bank books this side of Harry Lauter. Yes, sir, as a businessman and as a trader, I'd throw Valley in any day against Harry Lauder, and Rudy would wind up with the kilt. But enough of this. I could go on all evening saying nice things like this about Rudy. But words can't express it alone. Let's turn back the pages of history, and let me give you a few highlights in dramatized form from the story of this slant-eyed Adonis, your host.
Life and loves of Rudy Valley.
Abraham Lincoln was born in a cabin in Kentucky, but Rudy Valley was born in a lobster trap off the coast of Maine. He was raised in Westbrook, Maine, which is a stone's throw from Westbrook Pegler, who's throwing stones at everybody. But let's look in the hospital and look in on Valley the baby.
Congratulations, Mr. Valley. It's a boy. You can hold him.
Oh, thanks, nurse. Gee, what a cute face. He looks exactly like me, doesn't he?
Wait a minute. You're holding him upside down. You're looking at his feet.
Then came Valley the boy, gay, honest, sweet, smart, who would always leap out of bed with a glad cry. Here's Rudy at the age of 8 coming in from play.
Oh, joy! Oh, gladness! Oh, ecstasy! Oh, fondest dream come true!
Well, Rudy, I see that you have a new haircut.
Good heavens, man! Qu'est-ce que c'est?
I say, I see you have a new haircut.
No, Papa! Today, at school, I caught my head in the pencil sharpener. Oh, grief! Oh, disaster!
And it was boys like that who made the America of today. And now people are wondering how long Rudy Valley's career will last. We will make this prediction. We look into the future and present Rudy Valley and his Connecticut Yankees in the year 1988, 50 years from now.
Hi-ho, everybody. This is Rudy Valley coming to you for the 7,286th time. Tonight, our guest, Bobby Breen, that old veteran, Shirley Temple, that lovable old character actress. Who else have we, Graham? I can't see with his glasses.
Well, Rudy, we got the winners of the World Series, the Brooklyn Dodgers.
Well, I never thought that I'd live that long.
These 9 years have been made possible by your profitable attention to many a message like this one.
Maybe you know that meals often do not give you enough of the vitamins you need. But did you know that some people do not make full use of the vitamins they do eat? That's why this is such good news. Grocery stores in this vicinity are selling a new Fleischmann's high vitamin yeast. This new yeast is not only richer in 4 essential vitamins, it gives you these vitamins in a more helpful form. By acting to tone up slow digestion, this yeast helps the body take up and make fuller use of the vitamins and other foods you eat. 2 cakes a day of Fleischmann's new high vitamin yeast supply all the extra vitamins A, B, and D the average person needs. Also an abundant supply of vitamin G. Eat 1 cake a half hour before breakfast or lunch. Another cake a half hour before supper. Keep this up and see if you don't feel more energetic and if you're not bothered less with heavy colds.
To our regular listeners who in the final analysis have made it possible for us to stay in the air 9 years, our heartfelt thanks. We begin our 10th round of the calendar with a show that should measure up to any of our past efforts. The cast will include Lupe Velez, Doc Rockwell, Paul Garrett, Walter Slezak, and Mona Morgan. Today, the Valley Company opened at Lowe's State here on Broadway in New York for a week's engagement. Hope to see you there with us. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
Heard on tonight's program for the War, September, and Scrubbing songs from Knickerbocker Holiday. This is the National Broadcasting Company.